Hello and welcome to GCSE Revision Pod. Just moving my phone into the middle of the table there. I'm not an arrogant man. I don't feel like I should deserve more of the airtime or anything like that.
I think your voice is too loud already.
Well, exactly. So now the phone is properly positioned, we can say to you that we are now going to bring you our third podcast on AQA Language Paper 2. And we are going to focus today on question number 4, yes?
Yes. So this is a really challenging question. It's worth 16 marks. And I would spend probably about 20 minutes, maybe up to 25, depending on your time as your exam. Mm-hmm. The reason it's challenging, though, having marked this, is because of the skills that it's testing. Do you want to talk a little bit more, having marked this paper, Mr. Galley?
Yeah, I mean, what you're essentially looking for is here. The skills of comparison and language analysis are important, but what is perhaps equally important is making sure that you focus on those keywords from the paper, the writer's viewpoints and perspectives. This question is all about comparing via the medium of language analysis how the writers feel, what's their opinion, what's their viewpoint on the topic they're talking about.
But also how they use their methods to do that. So essentially, to summarise, it's comparing writers' methods and their ideas.
Yeah.
And the methods they use to present their
exactly.
ideas.
Exactly, that's a much more concise way of saying it.
So obviously, as usual, RTFQ and ATFQ, read the full question and answer the full question. Obviously,
absolutely.
You might use a different F word if you so desired, but we would not condone swearing.
No.
This is really, really important. So lots of people on this question, they just write about the ideas and they forget to talk about the method. So a nice, concise way to think about this is kind of like a bit of an equation for a bit of cheeky maths.
Yes.
This is like question 2 plus question 3 equals question 4.
Absolutely.
So all the skills from question 2 and all the skills from question 3, it's all in there.
Put them all together in a big soup and you will hopefully get a tasty question 4 answer.
So the kind of the question, I mean, if we turn in our packs then to page 11. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, on that note, please stop now and download the Language Paper 2 Kitten Pack.
Yeah.
There's a link for it in the bio of this podcast. And if you're on Spotify, you might have to copy and paste it into a browser.
In order to get it, yes. And also, we should also say that we have already done 2 podcasts on Language Paper 2. And we are going to be focusing on the same extracts today. So really, it would make an awful lot of sense for your revision if you haven't already to go and listen to the podcast we did on question 2 and question 3 first. Because then that will allow you to brush up on all the skills we're going to talk about now. And you will have already experienced the 2 texts we're going to talk about, right?
Yeah. And if you haven't read the texts on Aberfan and London on page 9 and 10 of the pack, if you could go away, download the pack and read those now.
Welcome back.
You better have read them, you cheeky devils. Question 4. Let's read question 4 and then I'm going to talk you through how to structure a question 4. We'll pick out some ideas from the 2 sources you might want to analyse and we'll read part of a model answer talking you through how we construct it. That's going to be the plan of attack. Then there's 2 other papers in this pack that you can have a go at yourself.
Exactly. You can take what we tell you today and go away and have a go yourself.
Because, lazy toads, the best way to revise is not simply reading and listening to what we've done. Active revision.
Doing things.
Having a go at actually answering some questions yourselves.
You must do things.
Do it. To quote Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, very...
terrible accent, sorry.
Very well done.
So question 4. For this question, you need to refer to the whole of source A, this is on page 11, together with the whole of source B. Compare how the writers convey their different ideas and perspectives of the events that they describe. Compare their different ideas and perspectives, compare the methods they use to convey their ideas and perspectives, support your response with references to the text.
Yes.
So the bullet points are really useful in this question because they remind you of those key skills. And I would always tick them off as I do them because if you only mention the ideas and not the methods, you're automatically being in the bottom half of the band, which means you're losing 2 or 3 marks for no reason. And the grade boundaries are only about 4 or 5 marks apart, so you're potentially going down half a grade for just silliness.
Yeah.
So this question, obviously these 2 sources that we've talked about in the last 2 episodes are on natural disasters. Source A is on a landslide in the Welsh town of Aberfan that killed a lot of primary school children. Source B is on a minor earthquake felt in London in 1863.
Yeah.
And what we're looking at is the writer's ideas and perspectives on the events. So we're not talking about the events, we're talking about, as the paper suggests, what does the writer think about that event? What's the writer trying to get across about the event? Is it serious? Is it funny? Is it a disaster? You know, what are they trying to tell us? What's their message?
Yeah, and then once you've got that, how do they do it?
How do they do it? What metaphors, what similes, mm-hmm. what words do they use that get across in that order perspective? To do it.
But very much worth saying that starting with the writer's ideas and perspectives is going to help you a lot here, because if you get your head around that comparison, if you get your head around the comparison between what the writers are saying about their two chosen topics, after you've done that, the language analysis aspect of it will make a lot more sense.
And let's be clear here, we need to avoid vague things like they're trying to entertain us, they're trying to inform us.
Right.
You need to be precise, what do they think? So try and think, is it they're presenting it in a positive way, a negative way, a serious way, a humorous way?
Are they trying to teach
their audience something? Are they perhaps trying to undermine something, subvert something?
Right.
What are they trying to do? So if we turn to page 7 in our packs, I'm going to quickly talk you through a way of structuring your answer. Then we'll pick out some ideas, and then we'll read your model answer.
Mm-hmm.
So I would start a paragraph. So the truth is, don't say to us, Mr. Forster and Mr. Galley, how many paragraphs do I write?
No.
The answer is...
I heard that question so many times
so many
on
times.
Tuesday morning.
So annoying.
Yeah.
The truth is, you look at the time and you think, I've got about 20 minutes, maybe up to 25. How much can I write in that time?
Yeah.
It might be one paragraph that's really detailed. It might be two. It might be three, depending on how quick you are.
Just to clarify, how much can I write at the top level of my ability in that time? Not how much can I write in that time. How much can I do of my best work in that time?
So one way of structuring a paragraph is like this. It's on page 7 at the bottom. Mm. I'd start with a topic sentence that compares the viewpoints of the two writers and ATFQs, answers the flipping question, the full question.
The full question,
We'll give you an example of that in a minute, but talk about their viewpoints and make sure you focus on the question.
Mm-hmm.
This will be slightly different from question 2, because question 2 you'll be comparing something different. So you need to be careful that you're not just repeating question 2, because it's very likely that they will have different focuses.
Yeah.
So for example, there was a trap, I think it was last year or the year before, where one was talking about the perspectives of drivers, the other one was a perspective about cyclists. So actually they seem similar, but they weren't.
Yeah.
So secondly, what I've then done, I'd get some quotations that are embedded and contextualised from source A, mm-hmm. which show this viewpoint.
Yep.
Then I'd zoom in on some words, phrases, language features from these quotations.
Mm-hmm.
So metaphors, similes, the connotations of words. Comment on the effect in detail. And make inferences about what they show about the writer's perspectives. You'll see this is combining the skills from question 2 and question 3.
Yes.
Making inferences about their perspective based on metaphors, similes, and other language analysis. Then what I do, D, a connective. This might be a new paragraph or it might be the same paragraph. Mm-hmm. Then a point contrasting the viewpoint in source B with what you just analysed in source A.
And then you just basically
and then
go
the same
through
thing.
The whole process
quotations,
again.
Zoom in on words, phrases, language features, inferences about the effect. And also say, not only say why they're different, but also say how far are they different.
What kind of difference
what
is
What kind
it?
Of difference? Is it a big difference, a small difference? Is it markedly different? Is it only is it actually a similarity that contains within it a difference?
That will make more sense as we start doing it, I think, as we go through the example.
So we're looking at the perspectives on the events. So the events are the landslide in source A and the earthquake that isn't very serious in source B. So should we have a look at source A then and think about what's the perspective of the writer on this landslide?
Yeah, absolutely.
What's immediately jumping out at you, Mr. Galley?
Well, he's conveying, I think, the...
So we're back on page 9 now.
We're back on page 9 now. I mean, a big thing that's coming across, of course, is the severity of the incident and the deep sense of tragedy that he's trying to convey. And I think all the way through, there's a tone of sort of absolute horror, an almost biblical sense of what a colossal disaster, what an unfair, terrible event this was to happen.
Yeah, and we can talk about the contrast between this quite domestic connotations of Abathur being tucked away like a child in bed, and then the personification of the Tip 7 as a malevolent killer stalking its victims.
Perhaps highlighting how unfair, I mean, something like this is always unfair, of course, whoever it happens to, but perhaps that sense of it being this little place that's tucked away, almost like nobody cared about it, and that was why something so terrible was allowed to happen to it.
And this is very different from source B, because actually source B is got quite a humorous tone. He's mocking the idea of the earthquake. It's so minor, it's hardly noticed at all.
Yeah.
In fact, he uses kind of exaggeration to describe how in Midlands it broke crockery, which is hardly a serious thing at all.
It's almost of, oh, how quaint, we had an earthquake. It's a very much undermining the seriousness of the
disaster. So in terms of comparing their perspectives, one is clearly trying to paint this bleak, disturbing picture of something horrific that's happened. The other is quite humorously engaging with a minor earthquake that's more of an object of quaint interest than a serious natural disaster.
So straight away, that has framed your answer, really, hasn't it? We've got one text that you might go into more specifics with your topic sentences for each paragraph, but the overall shape of our answer is going to explore one writer who is conveying the horror and the tragedy of an event versus another who's conveying the sort of humour and the slight intrigue around an event.
So we can look at an example on page 17 then. Having a quick go at a paragraph. So there's a model answer on page 17. It's quite long, it's got three paragraphs. Do you need to write three paragraphs, I hear you ask? Don't ask about number of paragraphs. It's all about the quality and the level at which you're writing. Because again, a quick reminder, dear listeners, the mark you get on the mark scheme is the highest point your answer reaches.
Exactly.
So if you had three paragraphs, two at level two and one was at level three, you'd get a level three.
Yeah.
So the truth is you need to not worry about the amount you're writing.
It's but the quality of what you're writing.
And that you are answering the question
and
that you're filling the time and getting your timings right.
Yeah.
The truth is if you get the timings right in this paper, you will write enough.
Yes.
So let's read from this model answer. The topic sentence, first of all. The writer of source A...
This is on page 17, by the way, if you are following along in the pack.
The writer of source A seems dispassionate at first, as he paints the picture of gloomy, isolated Aberfan as it lies tucked away from sight and mind. So we're talking initially about source A. If we want to improve that even more, we can immediately make that comparison a bit more clear.
Yeah.
So in fact, no, let's do the other one. I prefer the other paragraph. Sorry. Let's go for paragraph two, sorry. It's a better topic sentence.
Oh, right.
Whatever idiot wrote this paragraph.
I know, you're falling over your own pack at this point. This is embarrassing.
Page 17, sorry, halfway down. A further difference between the two writers' perspectives on the events they described is their respective suggestions of who is to blame. So the topic sentence is comparing, saying they think different people are to blame for these events.
Right, okay.
So this is a really clear topic sentence. Let's look at source A. Whilst the use of the passive relating how disaster struck and the simile describing the coal tips as being seemingly dumped by the hand of God initially seem to elide, that means overlook, the agency of the mining corporation, there are clear hints as to who is really to blame. The writer emphasises, for example, that it was too expensive for the company to dispose properly of the mining waste. From this, it's certainly possible to draw the inference that the mining companies valued their economic prosperity over the lives of the workers. Nevertheless, it's important to note the writer does not explicitly criticise these companies, nor does he even name them, something which is perhaps indicative of a reluctance to directly apportion blame for the tragedy.
Right, good. So you're coming in from this angle that source A is essentially... sounds like it begins to describe it as an act of God, but then it quickly becomes evident that they are saying that, no, actually, someone is to blame for this, but... they don't explicitly go in on them, but we can infer that there's a kind of anger in their tone that they believe that this could have been avoided and shouldn't have happened.
Yeah. So then we get onto source B. The earthquake in source B is, of course, markedly different. So we're saying it's very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
As it's presented throughout as a natural disaster. Mm-hmm. So the difference is, one is all the mining corporation blame. This is a natural disaster. The writer's use of the passive case here is thus maybe less surprising than it was in source A, emphasising how Britannia's fabled rock has been shaken from its base, how Edgbaston's successive shocks were plainly felt, how houses were shaken to their foundations, as it highlights how no one was responsible for what happened.
Okay, so you came in with your clear difference. One explores the blame factor, the other holds no blame. Of course, it is just a natural disaster. And then you've picked apart language, you've done some inference, you've basically covered everything you need to do on that paragraph on page 17, yeah?
Yeah. So what I think we'd like you to do now is we'd like you to turn to page 23 in your packs. We'll have a quick read of this question together, because this is a really hard question.
Yeah.
And then actually, once you've been on page 17, you can then eventually go back to page 8.
Hang on, you just said 23. Which page 23, do you want me to go to?
My brain's not working.
This is a disaster.
Page 23.
This doesn't happen on Mr. Bruff's videos.
So, page 23. Yeah. Let's turn there. So, the second example that we want you to have a go at now, and I actually want you to write this, because the best way to revise is by actually doing something.
Okay.
This question says, these are two sources. One is on the Glastonbury Festival, and their perspectives on that festival. One is Charles Dickens writing about a fair in London in 1839, and his perspective on that festival. So if you've not read these yet, it'd be a really good chance to have a go and read them now.
Yeah.
Remember though, whenever you read the text, start by reading the summary at the top of the source.
So these are on pages 21 and 22.
Good thing you're here, Mr. Galley.
Welcome back.
You read them?
I haven't, but I hope our dear listeners have.
So, I have. So, the question is, for this question, you need to refer to the whole of Source A together with the whole of Source B. Compare how the writers have conveyed their different views and experiences of the festival and fair they describe. Mm-hmm. So, this question is looking at their perspectives about the festival and fair and what they've seen and done there.
Yeah.
But it's all, again, it's about their perspective on it. Did they enjoy it? Was it enjoy it? Was it horrible? So things you might pick out. And what I'd encourage you to do, try and pick out some features yourself.
Yeah.
Have a go. Remember, the easiest things to analyse are actually metaphors and similes and personification and the connotations of words.
We should perhaps say, of course, that again, I think that point that you made earlier, which is really nice, before perhaps going for the features, think about what is the overall opinion and belief of the writer. What is Elizabeth Day saying about Glastonbury, what was her experience of it, and then what is Dickens saying about this fair? And then within that framework, you can then start looking
for your example, features. My topic sentence might be something like, whilst both Glastonbury Festival and Greenwich Fair are described as chaotic events, it's immediately clear that the two writers had very different experiences.
Yes.
That's quite a precise difference, saying they're both chaotic, but actually the writers had very different, markedly different experiences. I might then look, for example, at Dickens's kind of comic his metaphors describing the crowd as dense, how it would swing you chaotically to and fro. I might look at I might seem to kind of parallel this with Day's comic depiction of the festival goes as survivors drawing upon the semantic field of natural disasters.
Yes,
and I'd compare therefore what this shows about their experience of the fair. Once you've had a go at that, on page 8 there is a model answer that follows the structure we laid out that you can have a little look at and use that to check against your own writing. How similar was it? How different? So what we'd like to do now, have a go at that question on page 23. Write your answer. Compare it to the model answer. There's also a mark scheme for this on page 28. Have a little look at that mark scheme also. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's really good. I think we should just go through the pages again because I worry that we made it a bit
messy. Okay.
So, to be clear, the two texts you're looking at to practice this are 21 and 22. The question is on page 23. Mr. Forster's fantastic model answer is then on page 8. And the mark scheme is on...
Page 28.
There is,
however, a contents page on the very front page of the pack, which talks
fantastic.
You through that, above the cute picture of the kitten.
That is very nice. Cool. Hopefully that helps. We will be back later today with a Question 5 podcast, if we can.
I'm so excited.
Brilliant. All right. We will see you then.
I'm not actually excited.
Follow us on Twitter at GRevisionPod. Email us at
EnglishRevisionPod@gmail.com.
And we will see you later.